Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It ain't the left side or the right side, then it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side.
Good morning, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of On the Fin Side here with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Brian Kat, NFL. Paul is Fanatic underscore pick on Twitter. This is the first weekend without football of any kind. No Dolphins games. No playoffs, no Super Bowl, no Senior Bowl. We've hit a little bit of a dry patch here in February. God, I hate this month. The cold, the no football, it all sucks. But we're going to take a look here at the Dolphins offense here today and really just a high-level offensive overview of what we would prefer that the Dolphins do here in the offseason. They've got a lot of money to play with. They've got draft picks to use. So Paul, taking a look at it though, it all comes down to what happens with Tua this year. You know, he's entering his second year. Obviously there's been a lot of talk about him here in the off season. So my question to you is, what do you think an appropriate stat line would be for Tua Tagovailoa in year two that makes you think, okay, this offense is on the right track?
So the scary thing with Tua is, because of his touchdown to interception ratio this year, you know, you really can't do what you normally would with a rookie quarterback and say, all right, he needs to really cut that down and have a better touchdown to interception ratio. For me personally, some of it's going to depend on what they do at the receiving position this offseason, but I'd really like to see at least 18 touchdowns out of him combined. It can be rushing, it can be passing, at least. And probably at least 3,800 yards. I mean, I'd like to see more, but I'd like to see at least those numbers with six or less interceptions.
Yeah, we're close on the yardage as far as what I'd like to see him do this year. I would say for me, it would be the bar I'll set is 4,000 yards passing, which would be, according to last year's stats, would be 13th in the NFL. 26 touchdowns, which would have been 16th in the NFL last year, and 11 interceptions. If you have a 26 touchdown to 11 interception ratio, that is where I would say that now Tua is among, let's say, the top 15 quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's only in his second year. We're on the right track offensively. And also, too, I mean, I think a playoff appearance is important for Tua and the rest of the offense, too, because this defense, I would argue that they were a top three defense last year. I would be very disappointed if they weren't a top five or top 10 defense this year. So the offense certainly needs to pull its weight here, and Tua's got to be the one driving that.
He does. And, you know, that's the biggest thing. I want to see him get in those situations where you don't try to take him out of games. You know, some of that's going to depend upon who his backup is, you know, and a number of other things there. So, really, I'd like to see the stat line, the playoff thing, as we saw this year. I think the Dolphins had a successful season. They got kind of a little hosed on the playoffs. And I'm not gonna tear them to shreds for that. I mean, anytime you go 10-6 or better, I'm okay with that, and the other chips fall where they may.
Yeah, 10-6. If you had told me before the year that that's what they were gonna do, then I would have said that was a successful year. You did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh yeah, you did. I said 7-9. I said they may, and maybe they sneak into the playoffs if the offensive line plays better than I think, which they did. But I'll stay. I thought they'd win 7 games last year. I'm not going to make a prediction yet for this coming year because there's still a lot of work to do. Some main points here too. The salary cap, the NFL salary cap, should be set between 180 and 181, according to recent reports. The Dolphins have 23 and if it's at 181, the Dolphins would head into the offseason with $23.5 million in cap space, but an additional $15.4 million in rollover from last year, bringing that total there, if my math skills are right, to right under $39 million. And if you also factor in, we expect a few players to get cut, not many, but like Allen Hurns, Clayton Fedulum, that number should be north of $40 million in cap space. On the other hand, the Dolphins will probably need to save about $8 million in cap room. And in addition to that, so $8 million in cap room for the draft. And they also have 4 free agents after the 2022 season. After the 2021 season, excuse me, Mike Gesicki, Emmanuel Ogba, Jerome Baker, and Jason Sanders, Paul. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where kind of that money gets spread out even before free agency hits.
Yeah, I think they're going to end up re-signing at least a couple of those guys here during the offseason. I think it's going to depend on what the demands are. I'd really, really like to see Baker and the Colonel back. I want to see Gesicki back. And, you know, it'll be interesting because I want to see Miami start being homegrown, especially with the accumulation of draft picks that they've got going on.
I would look at these guys here, and if I had to throw some numbers out, I would say, and Paul, you let me know if you agree or disagree with it. I would say $9 million a year for Gesicki.
Okay.
$11 million for Ogba.
Okay.
Let's go $8 million for Jerome Baker and $4 million for Jason Sanders. I think that's what it would take to extend them if I had to guess.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I would still extend Gesicki. And my only hesitation was if Kyle Pitts would be in play, but I don't see the Dolphins going down there. I actually hope they do. But you know, in that scenario, maybe you wait till after the draft to extend Gesicki. And I think they probably will wait till after the draft for all these guys.
It's weird when it comes to Pitts and Gesicki, because I don't feel like one precludes the other as far as signing them, being on the team, utilizing them on the roster. You saw Miami last year with Durham Smythe, who's getting better, Adam Shaheen, who did okay, and Gesicki. There are ways to have two tight ends coexist, let alone, you know, you've got Pitts who can line up anywhere from the sideline to just outside the tackle. You got Gesicki who, let's face it, he belongs in the slot. And you can really, I mean, if you're going to get creative with your offensive coordinator assignment, which is, it, by the way, it's still weird Miami hasn't officially announced it, last I checked. But if you're going to get creative with that, I think you can get creative with two damn good tight ends on your roster.
Yeah, and I don't even qualify really them as tight ends. You mentioned the word big slot last week, and I think that's exactly the case. I mean, Kyle Pitts, I think, would be more likely to block, to stay in line and block, but he would be flexed out often as well. And, yeah, so, I mean, Kyle Pitts is one of those rare guys where if Kyle Pitts had said, I am a wide receiver, don't call me a tight end, I am a wide receiver. If he said that, which he's not, he would still go in the first round. And I don't think I've seen any tight end in the draft in 25 years of watching this that I could say that about.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he's a big slot, but he blocks so damn well. Like, it's not, I mean, he's not going to be the best blocking tight end in the land, but really, he can get in there and be effective and get in people's way and stay there. And that's a hell of a lot more than we could say for Gesicki in the blocking game. I mean, I remember, what was it, the Raiders game on that long touchdown towards the end of the game. And I remember we spotted Gesicki blocking and we both lost our minds because he actually blocked somebody. Like, that says something right there.
Yeah, and if your receiving skills are as good as Gesicki's and Kyle Pitts's are, you don't have to be a great blocker. You just have to be able to do it. And I think both of them can do it. Gesicki has improved more and more here over the years. Pitts already is a functional blocker. He legitimately lines up in line for Florida, which makes him even more special, and you can give a lot of different looks here for the offense. But Paul, looking at the needs for the Dolphins this offseason, running back and wide receiver, I mean, if you were to tell me that the Dolphins hit home runs at those two positions, and they've got the money, they've got the draft picks to do it, and that the rest of the team wouldn't change at all, then I think the Dolphins are certainly ready for a playoff run.
They are. I mean, it's – I think – and just playing with mock drafts, not even really truly playing with free agency – what you can do with this team and this roster and the ways that you can make improvements really, really set you up well for that. And one of the things I want to just say here real quick on that front is when you look at the upcoming draft, I know this is not a popular opinion. I know everybody says we have to go all offense the entire draft, blah, 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 blah. No. It's this team is built around having a dominant defense. This team is built around having good special teams. And then, yes, we do need to improve the offense, but you cannot and should not ignore the defense in this year's draft. And this is not a pitch for Micah Parsons. I'm making a pitch for Kyle Pitts at that top spot as well. This is more of a pitch for you have to at least surgically add players that can be effective in this defense, because there were some big ass holes in this defense last year, despite the fact that they played so well. And if you could add a few extra opportunities for the offense with better field position, guess what? That's just like adding a playmaker on offense in some respects.
Yeah, defensively, I think it's very important to keep that secondary stocked. We saw last year what happened when Byron Jones went down for a couple of games. We saw what happened too in the final game against Buffalo when Nick Needham was outmatched by speed in the slot when Isaiah McKenzie went off. So I think it is important. I would not be against the Dolphins drafting a defensive back or two, really even in the first three or four rounds. They have the opportunity to go. They're not going to go running back and wide receiver all through the first two rounds. They're going to have opportunities to draft the best available player on defense too. And I think they will come away with a linebacker at a certain point here in the first two rounds of the draft.
I do too. And that's why, you know, our regular listeners have heard me say it. I know you're probably sick of hearing the name leave my mouth. Unless something catastrophic comes out with these rumors and stories and what basically right now is hearsay with Micah Parsons, he is probably the biggest difference maker to come out on defense in the past couple of years, not just this draft, the past couple of years from what
more than more than Chase Young.
Well, okay. It's, you know what? Yeah. Because he can be effective off the edge, but he can also do things at the other two levels. I mean, it's very, very close for me. It's a lot closer than you would think. It's Chase Young is a dominant edge player. Do not get me wrong. But the things that Parsons can do differently, and the fact that I still see him being good for improving the Dolphins' defense in that turnover category by at least six turnovers, plus from where they were today, not like he's just adding his to replace whatever whoever's did. I see him increasing the Dolphins' turnover margin on defense by at least six.
Okay.
So
that's a lot.
It is huge. It is utterly huge. But the way he gets that hand in and tries to separate the ball, the fact that they play Josh Allen twice a year, which Josh Allen did improve a lot this year, but his ball security is utter trash. And Micah Parsons is like the Josh Allen eraser, which I love. I mean, not eraser, but you know what I mean here. It's very much a situation where I want a guy that's going to cause turnovers, wreak havoc in the backfield, come off the edge, play linebacker, stuff the run, and, oh, God, he can cover people too.
He's a little raw in coverage, but I think that's the knock against him is the position he plays and that he's not very experienced in coverage. But I don't see it just because he hasn't repeatedly done it doesn't mean he's going to be unable to do it. There's nothing in his instincts or his speed or his length that implies that he's not going to be able to do that. And I think he does. What increases Parsons' value is that he can chase down a Josh Allen in the open field. So, yeah, absolutely. So, we've got a lot of time to talk about what the Dolphins would do at that top spot. A lot of mock drafts have Parsons dropping a little bit. But let's get back to the offense here. At quarterback, we both agree Ryan Fitzpatrick, probably not a good idea that he returns. I'd be shocked if he did. I think you're setting up a very dysfunctional environment if he does. But they've got to bring in somebody. I don't think Jake Rudock is going to be the Dolphins backup quarterback this year. Maybe he is. I don't know. But looking at the rest of this list, I mean, I think when you look at the top of these free agent quarterbacks, like Dak Prescott and Jameis Winston, maybe even Mitchell Trubisky, Cam Newton, I think they're going to be looking to compete for starting jobs somewhere. I'm not saying they'll get it, but I think that they're going to be looking to do that. Then you look past them at this next group of Tyrod Taylor, Jacoby Brissett, Andy Dalton. That's where I think the Dolphins are going to go for their backup quarterback option. Do you have a preference out of those three guys or maybe anybody else on the free agency list?
I mean, I'd be down for Tyrod Taylor. I'd be down for Jacoby Brissett. I don't really see Mitch Trubisky getting a huge starting nod, so he's a possibility for a backup, but I think he's still going to be looking for better money than I want to see Miami pay out. But as far as that goes, yeah, I mean, I don't want the Red Rocket. He seems like a good dude, but he just, what I saw him last year, you might as well just put Christian Wilkins at quarterback and call it a day, because at least he's not going to fumble and maybe he'll drag people a few yards.
Yeah, I want Andy Dalton actually as the backup out of this group here. Cause first I think with Dallas, the biggest problem there was they lost literally their entire offensive line. And that killed him. And I'm not saying Andy Dalton's great, but I think he's a sound backup. And he's also somebody that's had a lot of success in this league at that same height that Tua is. You know, I don't know if I want the Dolphins backup quarterback this year to have completely the opposite skill set of Tua, because if Tua were to leave the lineup, now you got to completely redo your offense from week to week. So I would stay with Dalton, but I'd be fine with Tyrod Taylor or Jacoby Brissett too. I don't want to spend a lot of money in the backup quarterback spot. Mitch Trubisky, if I'm not a huge fan of, but I think he is the best one on this list. And if he sees an opportunity of, look, hey, maybe I can go to the Dolphins for 2 years, $4 or $5 million a year, which is probably what he would cost. And I see a legitimate opportunity where I can get in the lineup if Tua struggles and secure a starting job with a good team. That might work for him. So that bears keeping an eye on. I think Trubisky is going to land a backup role somewhere. Not sure if it's the Dolphins, but somewhere.
Yeah, it's – I don't know. I think saying Dallas's offensive line having issues is kind of a simplification. They had a lot of problems. They had a lot of problems, and I didn't see Dalton as a solution. That's where I shy away. He's a mediocre quarterback that's enough of a name that is going to cause some just headaches controversy-wise that I don't love. I mean, I'd love to see Miami go after one of the three we just talked about in Taylor, Trubisky, if he's willing and able and willing to come in on an incentive-laden deal at worst. And draft somebody in the later rounds that you see some potential upside with to challenge Rudock for that third quarterback spot. Right now, with Tua at the helm, while he's developing, I would like to see them have a younger quarterback that may need to develop, as well as that veteran backup.
I could certainly see that. And when I look at the quarterback draft class, and we're both in favor of spending day three picks on developmental quarterbacks, because if you hit on one, man, you've really got it made over the next couple of years. I don't see one I love here, at least at this point. I mean, Kellen Mond, I think, has some physical skills, but he's so up and down, and he's been so up and down for so long that I'm not sure if I can trust him. I'm not a fan of Jamie Newman. Ian Book is an interesting backup option, but I just don't think he's got the NFL arm. Same for Sam Ellinger. Davis Mills is one that's been interesting through the pre-draft. He only had 18 touchdowns here at Stanford in his career, but he's a toolsy guy. I mean, 6'4", 215 pounds. He's got a good arm. He's somebody that you know, if we get down into if we see him fall maybe into the fourth round, maybe a developmental option there.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's some promise with Newman. I think there's some promise with Book, and I think there's some promise with Ellinger as well. But again, I don't want to take a quarterback before round five. Let's see who slips. Let's see who slides and see if they're there. And if they are with the right value and there's nobody else that you're over the moon for that slid, I'd be willing to bring one of those guys in and just kick the tires for a year, get them underneath, you know, Flores' staff and see what we have there. Don't forget, Flores is going to know these guys a little bit better for a few of them than most folks are going to, especially given the way that the combine is not happening this year.
Yeah, that it'll be interesting to see how credible these workouts are on campus. In a couple of ways. Number one, I think we're going to see some guys running a 4.240 when they're running a 4.7, and we have times that are all over the map on that. You've got to have some NFL representatives there, and I think that there will be, to make sure that this stays under control. And also, I just wonder, some of these guys who opt out, and we had, 20 or 30 guys opt out for the entire year. I want to see a wide receiver show up to the pro day, with a sandwich in hand at 255 pounds, and now he goes from a first rounder to undrafted free agent.
And becomes the best tight end around.
Yeah, he accidentally fattens up and moves into the tight end role. But where were we here? So I don't know where that came from. So let's look at the running back spot, Paul. The big question at running back is, are the Dolphins going to get serious about adding a big time player this year? Or are they going to say, no, we're going to fix the rest of the team, and we feel like in terms of getting somebody, there's enough depth in free agency and depth in the draft to get a good guy here. But last year, when you look at the Dolphins waited and waited for a running back, they missed a boat in the draft. They had some good guys taken between 32 and 64 in the second round, and they didn't get one of those guys. And then they went the committee route by giving $3 million to Jordan Howard. They traded a fifth rounder for Matt Breida. Neither player came close to realizing anything here this year. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think here? I know you're a fan of kind of these mid round running backs here.
Say draft it all the way. If you can get one of the top four or five guys, and then supplement that with one of the next four or five guys, I'm kind of in a good place with it. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I really, really like here. I mean, if you tell me that Miami came away even with Michael Carter and Trey Sermon, right? Like, Michael Carter, standout at the Senior Bowl, and then Trey Sermon, a guy one of our listeners was asking about too. You plug him in from Ohio State, and you have them fight it out with Gaskins and Ahmed and everybody else on this roster, and suddenly you have a good running back stable, and one that I don't worry everybody's going to break down. If you've got Gaskin as the third down back fighting it out with Sermon, or Sermon and Carter fighting for that top spot, I am okay with that. And that's without even getting one of the top guys, which, look, we all love Najee Harris. We all love Travis Etienne. We all love Javonte Williams. But if you can supplement it like that, this is a great position, and this is one that you can this is a deep running back class in this draft. And again, they're never less expensive than they are on their rookie deal as far as these running backs are going to go.
Yeah, I agree with some of that. And then on the other part, too, is when you look at all the running backs taken in the second round and what success they had as rookies. And I do think it's a young man's position. Mm-hmm. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 13 games, he had 1,100 total yards, and it seemed like he even was a disappointment. Cam Akers caught fire at the end of the year, and he's going to be a big player moving forward for them. J.K. Dobbins had 6 yards a carry. Jonathan Taylor was third in the NFL in rushing. And there's one guy in there that I'm forgetting too.
AJ Dillon.
Yeah, shut up about Dillon. I'm just kidding. Paul was a big fan of AJ Dillon here pre-draft, and that's going to be the reason that they move on from Aaron Jones. So they're able to draft AJ Dillon in the second round, move on from Aaron Jones. He's going to be a free agent. They're not going to re-sign him. And DeAndre Swift was the other guy, and when he was on the field, he looked like a damn good player. So now you look at the running back group here. I'm eyeing that 36 pick in the draft and saying, okay, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams. I feel confident one of those guys, probably most likely Javonte Williams or Travis Etienne, are going to be there at 36. That's the one I have pigeonholed there.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of Dolphins fans that are so worried about the running back position that they're like, we have to take a running back at 18 no matter what. We don't. And I like Najee Harris. I like Devontae Smith. We don't have to draft everybody that played for Alabama in the history of ever or draft people just because they know Tua. Guess what? Tua starts throwing touchdowns to somebody or handing the ball off to get people off his back. He's going to like them too. Tua is a likable guy. He's going to be friends with everybody. That is not something we ever have to worry about when it comes to Tua. Nobody dislikes the guy. Like, so, yeah, he likes Najee. Najee likes him. They can hug each other after a game if we miss. But I'm not overdrafting Najee at 18. Period.
Okay. I'm probably not either. It's tempting to just – because not only if you draft Najee at 18, which I'm not in favor of, if you do, now you've got a rookie of the year candidate immediately, in addition to the third overall pick in the draft that you've already taken. And to that too, is it is tempting, and I emphasize tempting, to sign Aaron Jones at running back. I'm not willing to do that. But I will tell you this, and I tweeted this out earlier this week. I would rather sign Aaron Jones for $10 to $12 million a year than waste my time with some of these guys like Le'Veon Bell, even Leonard Fournette, even though he had a good Super Bowl game, for $5 million a year. I mean, I think that's going down the Jordan Howard path again.
It is, and I don't know. I'm looking at some of the comments here, and M Black really had a great comment about, we're in a bad spot for a running back. 18's too high for a running back like last year. We might get a run at the end of blah, blah, blah. But you know what? You're right. 18 is too high. But that is a position where we are in too high of a position to draft the top running back. We're not in bad position for the number two or three running back on paper in this draft. We absolutely are not. But going back to free agency, it is tempting to look at Aaron Jones. It is tempting to look at Carson. It is tempting to look at, you know, Carlos Hyde, who had a little bit of a resurgence here and there. But end of the day, I don't want to pay the money that you're going to have to for some of these guys, or I don't want to pay for question marks anymore like we did this past year.
Yeah, and Roy Crosby in the chat mentioned Javonte at 50. That's quite possible. I mean, when I look at last year, if you would have told me that J.K. Dobbins – would have still been available at 50, which I think he went 54th or 55th last year, I'd have said you're crazy. And I think Dobbins was a higher rated prospect than Javonte Williams, at least at this time. So that is quite possible. But if you hold out, you may miss the run on running backs again. And now you've still haven't resolved the position. And the thing with Aaron Jones here too, is that if you were to sign him now, you've got a top five running back in the NFL. You've got a top five backup in Myles Gaskin, and you don't have to draft any of them. So now you go into the draft. You don't need a quarterback. You don't need a running back. You could use another offensive lineman, but it's not critical. And then defensively, you're probably already set. Now you can really go best player available. But I still wouldn't sign Aaron Jones. I would still go to the draft and really aim at that 36th pick to get one of these top three running backs. And again, Aaron Jones, nothing to shake a stick at over his career. In fact, there are three running backs in NFL history with 650 or more rushes and a higher yards per carry. His yards per carry for his career is 5.16. That's a lot. And the three that had a higher yards per carry average, Jim Brown, Jamal Charles, and I forget his first name, but he played in the 40s and 50s. His last name was Motley. And he was a Hall of Fame player too. So again, Aaron Jones, 25, 26 years old, but he is going to cost 10 to 12 million. I think it's a young man's position. Aaron Jones has had some issues staying healthy too. Likely I would go away from him, go to the draft.
Yeah. I'm all in on doubling down at the position in the draft. It's, and there are running backs I like on the free agency list, but unless something drastically changes or somebody shakes free or somebody's looking to trade somebody on the cheap, I'm just all in on the draft. I don't even think I'm not in a camp where I'm going to panic if we miss in the top three, because we're still not missing on the running back position by grabbing one of these guys that are there from, you know, four through eight. I mean, Michael Carter's a hell of a consolation prize. Ramondre Stevenson, despite a bad Senior Bowl week, is a hell of a consolation prize. And there are guys like Chuba Hubbard, et cetera, that may have had a little bit of a down year this year, but you know what? Like, they were guys we were talking about in the conversation last year, and there's a lot of promise.
You bet. You bet. And Marion Motley, thank you to our people chatting in here, was the name of the running back I was talking about. See, we have the best, we have the best people in chat. I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Most of them are okay. That Shake guy, I don't know.
I saw Shake say before here, John Avery, which, that was the first draft I really watched every pick come off the board. And in that year, the Dolphins were picking 19th. Randy Moss falls to 19. The Dolphins trade down and take John Avery at 29, use that third round pick in the trade down to draft Larry Shannon, who Jimmy Johnson said, was just as good as Randy Moss, or something to that effect. I can't remember the exact wording. So
yeah,
not actually, a good first year.
Speaking of the chat, make sure you guys are clicking like, make sure you guys are subscribing. We really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting as well. If you're not listening live, make sure you get us some comments, thoughts, concerns, questions, all of that.
You bet. So Paul, when I look at these skill positions here, and this is part of the problem, is that, you know, Tua needs help, and I don't grade right now the running back, the wide receiver, or the offensive line positions at higher than a C+. I don't at this time. This is why that the Dolphins need to pour a lot of resources into these spots, and they're going to. At wide receiver, there are only two receivers that I would say for sure will be back next year. That's Devontae Parker and Lynn Bowden. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to clear house with the rest, but you take a look, they all fall into certain categories. Albert Wilson and Jakeem Grant are possible cuts. I hope Grant isn't cut. I am in favor of cutting Wilson and saving, you know, what I think we said, with $3 or $4 million. And also too, you've got Mac Hollins. That's going to be a free agent, may or may not be back. He's a good special teamer, kind of blew it at the wide receiver spot, dropped a lot of passes, did catch that legendary pass from Fitzpatrick against the Raiders, but that's about it. And then I don't see Allen Hurns being back. They're going to cut him, I'm sure, save $2 million. And Isaiah Ford, I don't see him making the roster, but he always seems to come back from the dead somehow. So, and then you got Malcolm Perry, who will probably be battling at some point. I see him making the roster, but probably more as like a fifth or sixth guy. So, yeah, they have, and this is why it's good for the Dolphins. They have the money, they have the draft picks, and it is deep, 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 deep at free agency and the draft here.
It really is. I'm not as huge on, you know, tearing apart the top of free agency as some folks are. I mean, don't get me wrong. I there's not a guy in the top four that I don't like. I want nothing to do with Juju Smith-Schuster. I'm going to say that right now. But I mean, it's there are a number of talented players on this roster. The way Miami looks, I wouldn't be shocked if they look to grab maybe a middle free agent wide receiver with upside, as opposed to like tearing apart the top of the position. And I really think that, despite the fact I wouldn't burn a pick for one of the top three, unless somebody slides, I think this is such a deep draft at the wide receiver position. The majority of my attempt to fix it would be there. I wouldn't be cutting anybody before the draft. I really wouldn't. I would keep way too many wide receivers on that 90-man roster to go into camp. with pretty much everybody that's signed right now. You know, maybe get rid of a couple of the bottom end guys you know you're not keeping. But, you know, draft three guys. And, you know, like you could easily come away from this draft while supplementing other positions with a Kadarius Toney, a Tutu Atwell, and, you know, a Marquez Stevenson. Like, and you still supplement the other positions of need. So it's a no-brainer for me. And then you have these guys compete. You try to trade who you can. Grab a late-round pick. If you can get a seventh for Isaiah Ford, you could probably get at least a conditional sixth or fifth for some of these other guys.
Yeah, and you look at the success here of wide receivers drafted in the second and third round over the last few years. I mean, you've got, you know, just going down, you can just go down the list here. I mean, you've got A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Deontay Johnson, Terry McLaurin. Go to the next year. You've got Michael Gallup, D.J. Chark. The year after that, you know, Cooper Kupp, Juju Smith-Schuster, who still, I mean, is a late second round pick. He's obviously been a steal at that spot still, but I'm with you on that too. I don't want any part of Smith-Schuster. It's not, I mean, I think he's a decent player, but that's the point. He's a decent player. He's a underneath slot receiver, and he averaged what, 8.5 yards a catch this year. And he dropped a lot of them too. And, you know, he got it from a drop pass running his mouth. I mean, I'm not a big fan of him. And yeah, he's 24 years old, or he's 23, going to be 24, I believe here. But I don't see him improving. He's not going to get faster. I mean, and so I look at some of these receivers hitting the market. Curtis Samuel is the one I really want, because Curtis Samuel, 24 years old, fast, can separate. He's exactly what the Dolphins need to complement the skills of Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki. Chris Godwin is somebody I would like to, and there's a lot of talk that he's going to get franchised. I actually don't think he will, because the Bucs have a lot of players to resign here. And, you know, I think keeping that defense with Shaq Barrett and Levante David and Dominican Sue, who are all free agents, is more important than Chris Godwin. So he may hit the market too. And, you know, I'm okay. You look at these top seven receivers hitting the free agency: Godwin, Samuel, Allen Robinson, Kenny Galladay, Corey Davis, Juju, Will Fuller. I think out of those top five of Robinson, Godwin, Samuel, Galladay, and Corey Davis, you got to get one of them, because it lessens your needs heading into the draft.
See, and I don't think you have to. For me, one of the things, and I know we're about to talk about the tight end position, but somebody just brought up Kyle Pitts in chat, and I'm going to bring it up again. I know we talked about it at the start of the show. Drafting a Kyle Pitts is something that improves your wide receiver position, because you are probably on any given down going to be splitting out either Gesicki or Pitts into either the slot, out on the boundary, or elsewhere. So you have to factor in that improves your wide receiver position by creating mismatches out there that other defenses have to account for and don't necessarily know where they're coming from either on any given play. So, you know, and looking at just how deep this draft is at wide receiver, I think that as the season wears on and these guys get better and more comfortable at the NFL level and Tua gets a comfort level with them, I am okay with that. I want to see a set of wide receivers that grows and changes with Tua, not comes in and takes $80 million worth of cap over the next 4 years.
I think that Curtis Samuel is somebody I'd be willing to – I think he'll be $15, $16 million a year probably, yeah, which seems a lot. But he had a combined almost 1,100 rushing and receiving yards this past year, and he's getting better and better and better as a receiver, and you can get creative with him. And if you sign Curtis Samuel, you're probably cutting Jakeem Grant, because Curtis Samuel is a great returner too. So that also saves, you know, gets another $4 million off the books, even though you're paying Samuel $15 million a year. So, but I see a real opportunity to, you know, say at the end of the draft and free agency that our top four receivers are, for example, Devontae Parker, Devontae Smith or Jamar Chase, Mike Gesicki, and Curtis Samuel. And if those are your four options, top four options for Tua, now he really has what he needs moving forward to be that franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and I would say the same, though, for me, if it's Devontae Parker, Tutu Atwell, Kadarius Toney, and Mike Gesicki out on the edge with Pitts in tight. Like, it's you've got Jakeem Grant behind, or, you know, to mix in there. It's, you know, I don't have a huge issue with that lineup either because of the mismatches it creates that make up for some of the fact that maybe you didn't get a top of the heap guy, but you've created mismatches with the guys that you've got.
Yeah, it's certainly deep here in the draft, and we'll take a deep dive in that as we continue to go along. Because yeah, Dane Brugler, one of my favorite draft analysts for The Athletic, he created his top 100 board, and I think he had 17 wide receivers in the top 100, and that's been pretty typical year by year. There's been so much deep talent that's come out. Yeah, I mean, even past Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle, a lot of receivers I like in the back end of the first round. Rashad Bateman, I think, is very similar to Justin Jefferson last year with how he's 6'2", can separate very easily. I think he's a receiver that's been successful here in the NFL. Great route runner too. Kadarius Toney can do some unbelievable things with the ball in his hand that you don't see very often. And one of my favorite players, Elijah Moore from Mississippi, had almost 1,200 yards this year, but I think his ability to run routes and separate, he looks a lot like Isaac Bruce to me. And those are heavy words, but he could separate really well. And then you get to the middle rounds, you know, Shai Smith, Demetri Felton, Nico Collins, Dwayne Eskridge, a lot of players that I like here too. So maybe you can double down there. And the reason I'm talking about wide receiver and free agency and spending that money is because that's where like all the talent is almost, you know, you've got, but if you took the top 10 free agents, six of them are probably wide receivers.
They are, but you know what? That's also where the talent is in the draft right now too. And you know, it's there's so many guys in the mid to late rounds that I love in this draft. I know you mentioned a few of them, but I mean, like guys like Jalen Darden, Marquez Smith, Amari Rodgers, Josh Palmer, Trayvon Grimes, which, God, like, I'm not a Florida fan, but you know what? Their receivers last year, you know, Frank Darby. I mean, it's you can list off a number of these guys that are just ridiculously impressive. And Dwayne, I don't even know if you mentioned Dwayne Eskridge, who I know we both love. Like, it's insane to me. And the way some of these guys are going to slide just because of the fact that there are so many available in free agency, which the depth in the draft should drive some of those prices down other than the top three or four. I don't know. I think that this is a position that Miami could really fill and fill well. Like I said, I'd even triple down just because of the depth at wide receiver this year.
Yeah, and the other question too is, if you draft a wide receiver in the middle round, you really need to be sure that we're not just throwing another one onto the pile, because Devontae Parker and Lynn Bowden will be back. We know that. But, you know, Jakeem Grant will probably be back. And Preston Williams is coming off another injury. But the Dolphins aren't just going to cut him. Albert Wilson may or may not be back. So, like, we can't have nine wide receivers here and, okay, now our seventh and eighth receivers are making $4 and $5 million. Some of these guys are going to get axed, but they've really got to make sure that they're using the resources properly.
I'm going to go Hunger Games at the position. If it's me, let's fix this. may the odds be ever in your favor. You know, only the strong survive. We'll see who's here September 1st.
All right. Well, And Isaiah Ford is cut out for that. He always seems to come back from the dead somehow. So yeah, I'll tell you what,
we'll trade him for something and then sign him back. We're good.
Yeah, if we traded him to the Patriots, he was still a Dolphin 6 weeks later. Phenomenal. But I'll tell you, if I look at Isaiah Ford the way I looked at Bakari Rambo a few years ago at defensive back, that If he is your start, if he is getting playing 50 snaps again late in the season, something went wrong.
You counted on Preston Williams to stay healthy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, Preston Williams might be in a position where, look, hey, we're going to put you in the back end of the depth chart. You're going to be kind of that Swiss Army knife for 10, 15 plays a game. Get yourself healthy. We're not going to have you as a 50 to 60 snap guy because you tore his ACL 2 years ago, had a foot injury last year on IR both years. So, Paul, looking at tight end now here, and I'm going to make it really easy. The Dolphins either draft Kyle Pitts. I don't see them going that route third overall, to be honest with you. But if they were to trade down and, you know, into that, trading down to number eight with the Panthers is something that's being mocked like crazy and predicted like crazy. If that were the case, I would love it. I think Kyle Pitts is a special player. He makes looking great look effortless. And that's what I think is an underrated thing coming out of college. But I'll make it easy. It's either Kyle Pitts or I'm ignoring the position completely because they have Mike Gesicki, Durham Smythe, and Adam Shaheen as their three tight ends.
I'm not going to say ignore it completely. But again, it's if you don't get Kyle Pitts, if you get Kyle Pitts, you better ignore it the rest of the way. There's no reason to double down this year like you did a few years ago. But if you don't get Kyle Pitts and say Pat Freiermuth slides to the late second, early third, if you don't get Kyle Pitts and Brevin Jordan's sitting there in the fourth, or you get to the fifth round and Kenny Yeboah and Trey McKitty are sitting there, I'd consider those because I do think that there's some upside, especially with a guy like Yeboah. Yeboah has the ability, but we need to see a little more consistent effort from.
Yeah, he's a toolsy guy, that's for sure. And one name, too, in the, you know, if we get down into the sixth round where the Dolphins have a pick, Tony Poljan from Virginia was actually a transfer from Central Michigan. And his offensive coordinator at Central Michigan was Charlie Fry. He was the Dolphins' new quarterback coach. So there is a connection there. Maybe that's something that gets done in the later rounds. There is that connection. But now finally offensive line. And this is where I think most of the disagreement happens with Dolphins fans. I mean, I think we all know that we should get a running back, get some receivers, et cetera. The major question is, do the Dolphins add another player at the tackle or guard spot or center? Or do they say, you know what? This offensive line started three rookies last year, and we're counting on improvement from them to take this position from, let's say, a C-plus to a B-plus. And then we resign Ted Karras, and Eric Flowers is good enough. So what route will you go here in the draft and free agency, Paul?
I'm not one of those people that's drooling at the idea of, you know, we have to go out and get a tackle. And I'm not just talking about the Penei Sewell crowd. You know, there are people that are literally, you know, throwing every possible top name tackle our way. I got news for you. Those guys were starters last year. I like what you just said about counting on improvement. I thought Robert Hunt showed a lot of promise. I really did. And Austin Jackson showed a lot more promise than I expected to see from him. I mean, it's if the right guy is there at the right price, sure. I wouldn't mind adding a guard to challenge Flowers. We all know how I feel about Big 66 and his long-term potential. And really, I'd re-sign Ted Karras, but that doesn't preclude me from drafting a center. Center seems to be the position I keep coming back to, given the fact that guys like Josh Myers should be there a little bit later on day, you know, into day three. Creed Humphrey should be there on day two, potentially. You know, and there's a handful of other guys at that position that just don't seem to be getting valued this year. And Quinn Meinerz. If Quinn Meinerz is there and ready to go, I would definitely run up to the podium, you know, at the top of round three and top at back end of round two.
Gotcha. That was my question, is where would you take Meinerz? And yeah, you look at pick 50 or 82, so second, third round. Yeah, I would love if he were still there. What's tempting is on the same team as Aaron Jones is Corey Linsley, the center for the Packers. But It'd be interesting to see what he costs because
I'm not paying Lindsley money.
Yeah.
He's gonna rob the bank.
But he's 30, and that's why he may not cost as much as you think. If you're telling me that you're talking about $7 or $8 million a year for Lindsley, I don't know. I might consider it because I think he's a top. I think you could take one of the top. You could have one of the top five centers in the league, but I think he'd probably cost more than that. And at which point I'd be out. Ted Karras, I think, did well enough. He's not a great athlete. If the Dolphins are looking to get more athletic on their offensive line, I think Karras and Flowers may be a problem moving forward. But they're good enough for now, and they're good enough pass protectors for now. So Ted Karras, one year, $3 million last year. And I think he proved that he's a decent player. I would certainly like to have him back unless they said we really got to go the Corey Lindsley route here, which I don't think they will for the center spot. But Paul, too, you know, you mentioned center. It's not a real deep draft at center. You know, you've got, especially if, like yourself, you don't like Landon Dickerson and you don't want him being the guy.
I like Landon Dickerson. I just can't draft a center, let alone draft him high, that has that many leg issues. Like it's just, we saw what happened with Pouncey. He's going to make the all pro team, and he's going to accept the award on crutches most years.
if you got down to the fourth round with Landon Dickerson, I would certainly take him because just him, I like him more. He would be my number one center in the draft, if not for injuries. But yeah, I Creed Humphrey, I think, you know, taking him at the end of the second round, I would certainly do. But I'm not as gaga over him as some other people are because I've seen him struggle too much with bigger defensive tackles for me to feel confident. I think you may have the Tim Ruddy problem where, yeah, he's a good center. Yeah, he's a good pro. But every time we go up against a giant nose tackle, he gets shoved back into the quarterback. So I don't want there to be that same. I'm not saying Humphrey's not quite like Ruddy was in that, but I've seen him get knocked back against bigger people. Plain and simple.
But I've also seen him maul people more than I've ever seen from Ruddy.
Yeah, Ruddy certainly didn't maul people.
No.
Josh Myers, I'm not a huge fan of. I think he gets out over his toes a lot in pass protection, and I'm not sure if he has enough core strength to really hold up. I'm not, I mean, day three, maybe, but I'm not a huge fan otherwise. But let's talk about the main thing. And that is obviously the guy that's being mocked a lot to the Dolphins at three, and that's Penei Sewell. And I am still of the opinion as we sit here today, I want one of two things to happen. The Dolphins draft Penei Sewell, or they trade down and get a first round pick in next year's draft and then take the best available pass catcher. Anything other than that, I would have a hard time. I wouldn't see that happening other than those two options right now.
Well, Parsons has good hands, so we're good.
yeah. Look, I've seen Parsons on mock to the Dolphins at number 18 overall in some of these mock drafts.
Yeah, I think that's people that are banking a little too much on somebody. Even if unless things get catastrophic with the off field, and I mean truly catastrophic, somebody's gonna take a flyer on him before 18. Like it's just the talent is too great unless the legal issues are too much.
Well, he doesn't have any legal issues right now. He just has some character. He was supposedly the ringleader in a hazing incident at Penn State. Hey, and I don't know the details of that.
Look what Peyton Manning did for, you know, with a female reporter, I believe it was, or a ball girl or whatever. I mean,
yeah, there were allegations of that as well. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I'm not going down the road of, and I know you don't want to either, of how bad this was. Was it true? Was it not true? Look, in terms of evaluating a prospect, the Dolphins have to figure out, is this a pattern with this guy or is it not? And if it is, then that's a problem. If it's not, if it's just immaturity, he was a teenager when that happened, et cetera, and then that's a different story. Because a lot of these times you look at like the immaturity with, for example, like Darius Geis, when he was at LSU, and supposedly he did some horrific things, we've learned, after he's left the league. Yeah, when things go off the rails, it's like, how did you not see that? But yeah. Then if you pass up on a player because of a couple of immature incidents, and then, okay, well, he grew up into a man in the NFL, how'd you pass over him? So I think a lot of it's revisionist history, too.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, with him not even being a truly named person in a lot of these allegations, it makes it harder. You know, it's, again, there's a lot to shake out and a lot of runway between now and the draft. But it's, I like Penei Sewell one hell of a lot. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I just think you could utilize that pick to trade down and get a haul. And I mean a haul, that really allows you to still take a top player at their position, in, you know, Micah Parsons or Kyle Pitts or potentially one of the top three wide receivers. I won't rule it out, while also adding enough draft capital to be stupid silly. So
yeah. I look at that Panthers spot at eight, and they look very, very determined to get a quarterback. And if they stay at eight, they're probably going to miss the boat on who they want. So that's why I think they are the ideal trade up option there. And so Dane Brugler predicted the Dolphins to move from 3 to 8 with the Panthers, and the Dolphins would get the 8th pick, a first rounder next year, and a 3rd and a 5th this year. Todd McShay predicted the same fallback from 3 to 8 with the Dolphins getting a 2nd rounder this year, which would be, I think, 39th overall, and a first rounder next year. So, and in that, those scenarios, they had the Dolphins taking Devontae Smith or Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. So that is an enticing route there. And also, you're getting the first round pick of a team that's going to be starting a rookie quarterback next year.
So, Kat, somebody just brought something up in chat that I want to bounce off of you. Normally not something I would think about, and I don't really see it happening, but I want to get your thoughts. You're talking about the Panthers pick. Would you, if it were you, and you were the GM, and they offered you their pick at 8 and Christian McCaffrey to come up to 3, yay or nay?
I'd say nay, only because McCaffrey's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I think, too, that he's had a lot of touches over his first, what, he's drafted in 2017, I believe. So 17, 18, 19, 20. This will be his 5th year in the league. He's coming off an injury riddled season. The major reason is he's going to cost a lot of money. And I don't want to have somebody like that and where you really have to build your offense around dumping the ball off. I mean, it's going to be kind of the Jarvis Landry syndrome there.
It is. And I figured I'd just double check with you, see what your thoughts are. And by the way, I'm going to throw this out there again, guys, make sure you're liking, subscribing, giving us all the comments and feedback in the world. We're loving what we're seeing from you guys so far this off season. So thank you guys.
You bet. Thank you, everybody. And finally, you know, I'll leave you with this here is the reason if I either want to trade down or I want Penei Sewell is if they were to draft Penei Sewell to combine with their 3 rookies from last year, Austin Jackson, Robert Hunt, and Solomon Kindley, you're going to have a core group of maulers for the next under contract and under 25 years old for the next 3 years. And it's not just about getting a tackle. It's about getting Sewell. Okay. I think this is a unbelievable prospect who when he was on the field at 17 and 18 years old, protecting one of the biggest assets in college football and Justin Herbert for Oregon, he allowed 1 sack in 2 years. 6'6", 330 pounds, and is probably going to run under 4.9. This guy got Heisman Trophy votes as an 18-year-old. To me, he is one of the best players in the draft, and he's a player that I think you have a rare opportunity to draft anywhere in the NFL draft. So,
and I just want to chime in there too, Kat. I mean, for me, it's I'm not arguing one bit on Sewell, but with him being a luxury pick and potentially being able to trade down, it's for me, it's about, is it Sewell or is it Pitts, with, you know, maybe a Rashad Bateman and, you know, a possible first rounder next year. You know, it's which to me at that point is a no brainer. You know, it's two or three really talented players or one. And, you know, I just that's where I get in with the Sewell thing. And he really with anybody at pick number three.
Yeah. Where I'd be a little underwhelmed if the Dolphins just stood at three and took a Devontae Smith or a Jalen Waddle. I don't think Waddle goes that high. He's, you know, cause he's under 5'10". That would be unheard of. But that's where I would be underwhelmed, but, there are not a lot of scenarios where I'd be upset with anything the Dolphins did at three. And part of it is because up until the final 2 weeks, I thought the Dolphins would be drafting somewhere between 8 and 13 with that Texans pick. And they Texans ended up losing their last, what, four games. Dolphins get the third pick in the draft. So that will do it here. Before we wrap up here, anything else jump out from the chat?
I'm going to take a look at that. But real quick, Kat, what are your thoughts on J.J. Watt?
Yeah. Overall, I would pass. I still think he's a good player. It's tempting if it's for the right price. I mean, if it were a contract, let's say 2 years, $18 million, and let's say the first year it's all guaranteed $10 million, and then you can cut him after the first year if he's too far gone, I might be okay with that. I think he'd give them a mountainous defensive front. And if he feels the Dolphins are possible Super Bowl contenders, if they add him, you never know. But I see him more likely going to either Indianapolis or Green Bay because they've got a need at those spots, and they should be in the contention for the playoffs too. If Watt were a few years younger, I think he'd still be in Houston, and maybe the Dolphins, but the Dolphins would probably be a little more interested. Him being 32 next month, that's I think what might end the conversation.
Yeah, I'd flirt with the idea. If he wants to come in at the right price, he can improve this defense. That's the big thing for me is if you're at the right price and you can improve the defense, I will mull it. I mean, he's definitely going to be a rotational player, but he's going to be a dominant rotational player if he can stay healthy. That's the biggest key is can he stay healthy, and that's part of why I want to see the right price. Because one of the things I like with Watt, too, isn't just the health aspect. It's the attitude. It's the approach. It's the maturity. It's the leadership. And he's got all of those characteristics that Flores just, you know, eats up and loves and wants in spades. So that's where I think it's a little more realistic possibility than people think. I think Watt wants to go to a contender, which I feel Miami is right in that conversation. And I think it could potentially happen.
You know, another thing too that comes into play is that you're already spending $18 million this year on Ogba and Lawson. And to me, they're worth the money. But now if you want to add on another $10 million to that, and you're talking about like almost $30 million to your defensive ends, I think that's a lot for a three-man veteran rotation. So that's another reason overall why I'd pass. But the other side of that too is if the Dolphins defense is going to be elite, and you could make a point that they're up there now, it's going to be in the next 2 years, and J.J. Watt could be part of that. That's what would be tantalizing about that. But overall, I see them passing. Another name I've seen mentioned in the chat here is Taylor Moton. For the Panthers. He's an offensive tackle that I think will be back with them because basically he's the only good player on their offensive line right now. And their whole offensive line is either bad or a free agent without him. I would overall pass just because of the amount of money he's going to get. I think he'll get $15, $16 million a year. He's a good right tackle. But I can't say for sure that Robert Hunt won't be as good as him throughout his NFL career. And then if you do that, you're going to take Robert Hunt and you're going to slide him into right guard. So now you're taking Hunt after a promising rookie year. He's been a tackle, you know, for the last few years in college football and with the Dolphins. And now you're going to have him move positions for a good right tackle. I wouldn't spend money on that. So I would pass on Taylor Moton.
Yeah, I would too. For me, it's got to be something that's definitively better than the upside. and I just don't see it there.
Yep.
Yeah. Outside of that, let's see what we got here.
While you're looking at that, Ryan Ramczyk, I don't know if he'll be available, but that would be another player, like with Penei Sewell, I would make an exception for. Because, look, if they go into the season with the same offensive line we've been talking about, Jackson, Flowers, Karras resigned, Solomon Kinley and Robert Hunt, if you can get improvement from them, then I think that could be that this unit could go from a C plus to a B. If we add another lineman for a high price or a high draft pick, they have to take this group to an A. And I think Ramczyk could do that. I think Penei Sewell could do that. I don't necessarily know if Taylor Moton would be the one to take them to that next level. So Ramczyk, the only reason I mention him is because he's due $11 million and the Saints are $99 million over the cap here this coming year. They're going to be cleaning a lot of house and releasing and trading a lot of players.
Yeah, they are. And not a lot jumping out in the chat. One thing I do want to mention too, one guard that intrigues me in this draft is Tommy Kramer from Notre Dame. I think he's somebody that in a later round could come in and do some special things. But again, it's we'll see. I think adding a guard is probably the better option than a tackle in this draft.
Yeah, I think the opposite. I like having a tackle, and if that guy becomes a good player, and it's deep at tackle too, then now you have the flexibility to kick Robert Hunt inside and do it with a player that's not costing you a lot of money at that other tackle spot. So, yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. There are a lot of options. It's going to be a fun offseason here, Paul. That's going to do it for our breakdown of the Dolphins offense. I'm Brian Catt, NFL. Paul is Fanatic_Pick on Twitter. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin side.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.